There.
All right, we're live now. So I'm actually in the studio of the Charity Charge podcast studio with Dan Leal, executive director of Seedling here in Austin, Texas. Thank you, Dan, for coming by today.
Oh, it's awesome to be here. Thank you for having me.
We saved some of the pleasantries and stuff. The more and more as I'm trying to do this podcast, some of the feedback I've gotten from the earlier episodes is people have appreciated the kind of no BS, just let's just run with it type of approach.
And I like it.
And
yeah.
I like that. It's my personality and what we're doing here. And
absolutely.
So we're just going straight into it. But no, I was mentioning when you first came in, we'll pick up on that this is for any future guests that might come here. 50% of the people find us right away and the other half just get confused, but you walked right in. So thank
you. It's a first. I'm usually lousy with directions. Can't find anything. Can't find my left hand. So this was a minor miracle, but that just means it was meant to happen.
Well, I'll tell you what I do appreciate about you, because I was even looking at the clock since we met for the first time for coffee yesterday. I knew this. You are prompt. You are on time.
Oh my gosh. My wife will so not believe you.
Well,
she'll so contradict that, but we'll go with that.
And those are my two.
Okay. We'll go with that.
We're trying to prop people up on this podcast. Yeah. It's all positive stuff. So just for what it's worth, I mean, we're going to obviously talk about Seedling and you and everything, but yeah, there's a bunch of things going on over here where we are in Austin, Texas. We're just south of St. Edward's University. So we've got St. Emily Brewery, Spokesman's a cool coffee shop, Indigo Labs, which is inside of Music Labs, which is next door. A ton of musicians are always in and out.
Oh, that's excellent.
The Austin Winery's here. And then you were asking about a distillery. There is the Austin, what is it? Austin Whiskey. Oh boy.
That's a
whiskey distillery.
I was there one time. Just over there. That's all I remember. I don't remember the name.
See, perfect. Then I don't have to ask you if you had a good time. I already know the answer.
That's an age thing. It wasn't a drunk thing. It's just an age thing.
Of course. Well, look, I really appreciate you coming in. And, you know, I was, even before this, as I was just prepping and kind of reading up more, I watched a really awesome video on the About Us page. So I feel a lot more dialed into what you're doing. A lot of people were asking me yesterday. They saw a photo I posted of us and they were asking about Seedling. So why don't we start there? Can you tell us, I mean, as I mentioned before, you're executive director of Seedling. Tell us what Seedling's all about and kind of your passion for it and how you got involved.
Yeah. So Seedling really serves a population that people don't think about. You know, we all want the best for kids. Everybody agrees with that, right? And you know, what's kind of funny in today's world, people watch a lot of cop shows. Like one of the hottest TV shows on TV today is on I&E. It's Live PD. But what people,
and I grew up watching cops.
Yeah, exactly.
Kid, like that was the thing in the 90s.
And everybody knows the theme song. We could sing it, yep, but I won't. Right.
All right.
Yes. Good job.
Help myself.
But everybody thinks about those shows, are fascinated by those shows. But what nobody ever thinks about is when a person gets arrested, the family, and specifically the kids. I mean, people, there are some scenes in these shows and when people hear that little cry in the background, but children who are impacted by their parent being taken to jail or taken away from them long-term due to prison or even removed from the country due to deportation, it has lingering effects on the children. And so Seedling is here to kind of help with that life storm that a child goes through that really impacts the foundation of their life when their parent is taken away. That's what we exist as. We exist to basically empower these children by providing a dedicated, caring, trained mentor to engage in relationship with that child 1 week at a time at the child's school to make a long-term difference in that child's life.
It's really amazing. And I was even sharing it a bit with my friend specifically. And he said, oh, it makes so much sense. You know that there would need to be a need for this, but it's really incredible that you're able to step in and fill that void. Can you talk a little bit about your model? Because it's, you know, on one hand, you have obviously the children that are so in need of this. But can you talk about the mentors and how they play a role?
Yeah. So the model is really, it's a school-based model. And basically the organization started because our founder, who's an attorney here in Austin named John Blazier, was approached by principals saying nobody's paying attention. Nobody's serving these children. And they're showing up in our offices more because they're stressed. So they're showing up in assistant principals' offices with more disciplinary referrals. And They were showing up in, not showing up to school as much as other kids, like attendance problems, grades. I mean, if you're having this happen in your life, you're stressed. And even as the parent remaining, if they are remaining in the house, the one that is remaining, you're just trying to make ends meet. So Seedling steps in, and how we identify the kids, first of all, is through the relationship with the school. We have a school contact at each school that helps unveil the kids. And then the mentoring you asked about, basically anybody listening to this podcast can be a mentor, because all it takes to be a mentor is caring, the willingness to listen, and the willingness to go once a week to invest in that child's life. And basically how we usually get our mentors is through partnerships with businesses and organizations, city government, engaging the employees in that business to talk to them about what we do, get that business's blessing and graces that they'll let their employee spend lunch, which is their lunch anyway, with a child at a school near them.
That's amazing. And so this is operating now in how many schools across Central Texas?
So in the 2018-19 school year, we were making new matches in 58 schools in Central Texas.
Wow.
And three school districts where we were making new matches. On top of that, we had a presence in 118 schools. Well, those remain that differential, like the 60, that's the difference. Those are schools where the mentor has actually followed the child to a school where we don't make new matches, but the mentor is willing to still drive a little bit farther to go see that child.
I really think it's amazing. I want to dive in, deeper into some of the aspects specifically of Seedling and your model and kind of lessons learned and all of that. But one of the commentaries that I want to make, as I've kind of had the benefit of now working with and seeing so many different nonprofits, what I think is so beautiful is, traditionally before getting into this work, so to speak, I always thought of nonprofits as solving the root problem. But I'll give you an example, which I think is terrific about, your model, is that there's always these byproduct effects. So, and it's just amazing when nonprofits can step in to do that. So for example, there's a lot of nonprofits that might provide, you look at the incarceration issue. Okay. And we think about, I always butcher this word. It's a tongue twister for me.
Recidivism,
right?
Yeah,
Or you think about like things like the Innocence Project or whatever, like there's that issue that's happening. But then the byproduct for this is like, ultimately it's the child that, and they're, it may be, innocent until proven guilty. And so whatever, for whatever reason that the parent's in jail, yeah, and whether they're guilty or they're innocent, the byproduct effect is it affects so many other people. You see this with a lot of organizations. I mean, we started just working with organization that provides grants to the children. If their parent has cancer, they're providing grants so the kids can go to camps and do things, because obviously they're, but it's trying to do this kind of solve this byproduct, which really is so, so, so important. So I think it's really amazing, what you're doing.
Yeah. People, it's kind of funny. I just went to a seminar about reframing, and we're kind of in this space of the nonprofits and human services, but what the seminar was about, a lot of people don't really get or understand or comprehend the term human services. Mm. When you're in the space, you're in the lingo. But when people think about human services or nonprofits, they think about a crisis. Like, we need to provide this person food. Very important. Mm-hmm. Person's utility bill. Very important. Homelessness. Very important. All those are kind of the emergency services. But what I think you're pointing to is that people are starting to become more aware about the need for preventative services that prevent things from happening, or things that are a byproduct, like you said, of crisis. And people don't think, the layperson, the person out there that's not engaged, they don't think about that as often as they should, the prevention and the byproducts.
100%. Yeah. And so I think it's just a wonderful model that you're doing here. Can you talk to me a little bit? I know you talked about how and why it was started, but what are some of the things that you've done to kind of innovate the model? I mean, I think any organization out there has evolved over time and, get started in one way, but recognize ways to grow. So can you talk a little bit through that? And part of why I asked the question is, I think for this podcast, I want it to be very much for people that are considering starting a nonprofit or maybe are so in the weeds of it, but a little frustrated trying to figure out how to improve, how to get better. What are some of the ways that Seedlings has evolved over the years?
Yeah, so I came to Seedling roughly 2 years ago. And what I've tried to bring to the model and what I recommend to every nonprofit is to make their nonprofit a relationship-driven approach. And I know that sounds duh, but so many times nonprofits, whether they're involved in the fundraising aspect or whatever, that they too much think transactional because they're like, okay, I need this money today or tomorrow to serve this population. But nonprofits are based out of the heart and they're based in relationship of the people that we're serving. In Seedling's case, that expands to relationship with the schools. It's a beautiful model because of relationship, obviously, that the mentor has with the mentee. And the reason that our mentors have a bigger longevity with the children is because Seedling pours into relationship with the mentors. And it's relationships with businesses who provide the mentors. What I'm saying, and if you really take the time with a person, as you're doing with Charity Charge,
and you're doing for me,
yeah,
so it's all
about relationship,
yeah, absolutely.
And I don't mean to get too cheesy here or anything, but man, if our world took that relationship-based approach, so many topics, whether politics or whether diversity-related topics and understanding each other, all of these things would be so more easily solvable if we took the time to pour into other people instead of being transactional.
I pause because I'm really trying to listen. I want to take that in.
You know?
I think it's so important. And I'll put out two things, and I really appreciate that about your spirit. Being able to work with now so many organizations and so many others that I've interacted with, it's really amazing to me the difference. And you can clearly see it in the leaders and then those organizations that are thriving. I'm specifically talking about nonprofits that make it much more about that long-term, about that relationship. And the other flip side of it, let's acknowledge it too, and you started it, which I think is fair. All businesses are challenging, and nonprofits included. And so I think potentially for anyone listening too, there is also the reality of if you're operating, especially let's say a small nonprofit and you got the budget that you need to hit, and then you're out there and you're fundraising, you know, constantly, it's tough, you know, and sometimes you feel like you just got to ask and push to get. But taking, I think, that relationship approach is the much proven, you know, longer term way to do it. And I don't know that in there, I just gave a complete answer. I'm kind of curious your take on it, because there is always the yin and the yang of like wanting to go the relationship approach. But I do think that we should acknowledge sometimes the challenge, especially when it's a newer, smaller organization and they really got to get every dollar. There's no budget surplus hanging around.
Yeah. You got to diversify your funding sources. And I mean, that's what we're doing while we're building relationship.
That's great. So what are some of the ways that you're diversifying?
Well,
just big picture. I mean, because yeah. I think that's really practical advice. This is why you're here, right? And why we're having this is to try to answer some of these questions that someone, a more seasoned executive director like yourself, would say. So talk to us about how you're diversifying, how you recommend nonprofits think about diversifying their fundraising sources.
So engaging foundations in relationship, engaging local governments in relationship to see where you might fit. And when you're engaging these people, it's about helping meet their goals, not just your own. You know, it's corporations, usually through like employee resource groups, because it's hard to hit the home run. Like, you know, people are like, oh, why don't you go ask Mark Cuban from, you know, do you know Mark Cuban? No, you don't have a relationship with him. Do you know, the CEO of Amazon? No. But if you engage in relationship with the people, and a lot of times these corporations, it's employee resource groups, looking at your own database and people that are already giving that would probably give more if you intentionally provided time with them. You know, it's basically about, and it does take time, especially for the small nonprofit to engage in relationship. But the difficulty of going out and getting $110 donations as opposed to, you know, $1,000 donation because you have worked the relationship there. You can get that bigger donation easier if you really truly work in relationship. And that's what Seedling is about. There's that donor side, but really it's about the kids side. You're going to maximize for the services to your client, and in our case, for the children, by engaging in a relationship with a kid. That's what we teach in mentoring. Like, you don't just go in that room and you don't just start talking to them about their parent who's incarcerated. We teach not to do that. You engage that child in relationships so they feel comfortable with you, so that when they're ready to talk to you about what they need to talk to you about, that they'll talk to you about it. So whether it's fundraising or mentoring or whatever, you're not going into that to get what you need. You're going into that relationship for that client to have their needs met first. And so often we go into relationships thinking, I need to get my need met here from whatever that meeting is about. And so with mentoring, the only way you're going to get that child's trust is relationship over time. And then the fruits start coming naturally, not because you forced it.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful. I think what's really unique about your model too, is that you have this such, your supporters / really your volunteers and your mentors are deep, deep in it and can really build these relationships, which are great. I think one of the things for anyone listening that would be interested in being a mentor, I want to ask you a couple of details on that. One of the things that I love that candidly I didn't notice, I knew it took place at the schools, but I didn't realize that you'll schedule it around the lunch hour, which seems amazing. I mean, you're making it very accessible for people that, you know, to fit it into their work day. And that's why I love then the approach to partnering and working with the businesses to kind of spread awareness to their employees that could be mentors. But what would typically the commitment, or how would it work? How frequently would someone visit during their lunch hour, and for how, you know, many weeks or months?
Yeah. So it's a school year commitment. You go for the full school year. Some of our mentors may engage their match in September, some in November, some in January. We don't start a new match after February because you don't want to have that child and that mentor together for less than 3 months. Mm-hmm. And life happens, right? And so it's a weekly obligation. We try to make it the same day if you can, but if you can't, as long as you're communicating with that child, hey, Joe, it's not going to be Wednesday that I'm coming next week, but I will be here Thursday, and communicating with that child, because remember, that child has already had a separation in their life. Mm-hmm. And so that reliability is really important to that child. So it's weekly. Most of the time it's lunch, but like me, man, my mentee moved from Austin to about 30 miles east of here. And it so happens, just divine intervention, that I live closer where my mentee happens to be now. Like, literally my house is 8 miles from my mentee. Wow. And so it just happened Beautiful. That way. So in the morning before on Friday, I go see him Friday mornings on the way into work. I get to mix traffic, but more importantly, I get to see him. And it happened to be during his advisory, so they granted the whole first period. That's awesome. Most of the time it's lunch, but it can be other times as well. But consistency is critical. Our average mentor-mentee match is 29 months.
Wow.
And for the person out there who's listening that's thinking about mentor, they got intimidated. I don't mean to say that to intimidate you, because we just want the commitment through the rest of the year. But what inevitably happens is, because we put that TLC and that relationship into the mentor, who in turn pays it forward to that mentee, and they just get in a healthy way crazy about that kid. You got to be crazy about that kid. They care, and they come, and they keep coming. And so that's why our match is so long, and that translates into results. Hope, resilience, measured. Academic desire, measured. All of that happens because of time. And this is my last soapbox, I hope, but it may not be.
This is your soapbox. But that's the point. This is wonderful and beautiful.
But you know, we're talking about that relationship thing?
Yes.
It is contrary to the world.
Go on.
Because in the world, we want the quick.
Yes.
Whether it's social media, Facebook, we want that instant gratification. So the world tells us, let's get instant gratification. But what mentoring and true nonprofit success and sustainability is, it's about the long-term play. It's about the relationship. And the world tells us we need instant gratification, but that's not really what works in the long run.
Where can we shift? Can we go on that for a second?
Yeah.
Help me understand. You're speaking about it in a very passionate way and in a way that I deep in my soul and heart know that it's the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I try to focus on that too.
Yeah.
But where do you think things shifted? When do you think things changed? Or has it, I mean, it's, so my point is in 2019, it's easy to point to social media and some gratification, all of that. But has this been a phenomenon that's gone throughout kind of human history, or what's your,
absolutely,
what's your take on it?
Okay. It's we're people.
Mm-hmm.
So as people, we have flaws. As people, we tend to look for things that are not truly satisfactory at times, or don't truly satisfy, I should say, at times. And I think that that is just a human bent.
Mm-hmm.
However, on the flip side, the positive is, as people, we inevitably, most people want to help other people and do feel good from helping people.
Yes.
So on the flip side, there's a positive. And I think it's something we're seeing in today's younger generation, the persons that are in their 20s, 30s, there is more of a want to help other people. It is the method in which we help and how we go about it, I think, that needs the help. But I think our deep down desires to do the right thing, but our bent is sometimes we slip in doing it the wrong way.
Have you ever heard of the book, The Go-Giver?
I have not.
I read this book that a gentleman, more or less, you know, 8-9 years ago in Austin, I ran into. He was speaking at a seminar, and I was chatting with him about a few different things. And he said, you really should pick up this book. And phenomenal book, The Go-Giver. But one of the things I agree with everything you're saying, it's extremely insightful. I love how you answered the question. I'm learning so much. One of the things that I would say to you and anyone listening as well, that I've really picked up on though, is you also have to be willing to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And accept is how the world goes around. Because if you want to give, if you give and someone else doesn't want to accept, then you can't give and you can't feel good about that. And if you're not accepting, you're not allowing someone. And I think that a lot of times...
Oh, accepting others to give to you,
yes,
like to help you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of times we put up guards around that, like wondering, oh, are we going to be indebted to this person? Or like, oh, are they going to hold something over my head? Or I don't need their help, or I don't need their support. But
oh,
we
so
all
true.
Know this, if you're listening to it, that there's so much joy in helping others and mm-hmm. giving back. But in order for you to feel that joy when you give, someone else in there has to accept. So the flip of it is, what I'm asking you to follow me here is, you have to be willing to accept. And if you don't accept, you are blocking that other person's ability to give, which makes this all a downward spiral versus you accepting their gift. Then you want to give to more, and then other people accept that,
yeah.
and then they give, and all this thing. So I want to point it out because it's on my mind a lot.
I love it, man. And the thing is that nonprofit employees
mm-hmm.
are the world's worst about accepting.
Mm.
People are like, well, they accept donations. Yeah. But for them personally, because people give in the nonprofit environment, and they've dedicated their lives to helping others and giving others. But that also can make it difficult for them to accept, because you see a lot of nonprofit employees who are the caregiver or see themselves that way.
Yes.
So they have a hard time accepting. That's why I believe in mentoring so much, is because not only do we at Seedling mentor these children, but I really promote and want my employees, because I've had a mentor. I think everybody listening to this podcast should accept by gravitating to someone who could be their mentor. Because if we can translate mentoring to the children and to each other as adults and accept that, that's an easy way to accept. And
many,
it feeds both people.
Many. I want to make a point on that too, actually. I try to make this as much, you know, but I was just about you and Seedling, but sometimes it's pulling out some interesting things for me. I've had a really interesting experience, especially since last August, where I had felt that I had had mentors throughout my life, and I truly had, and really remarkable people. But I took a step back and I tried to identify the areas of my life that were really important to me. And then I found mentors that I trusted and respected and admired in those specific areas. And what I really kind of realized through this process is that, for example, you know, I wanted to get a lot fitter. I wanted to be a lot healthier. Well, now I have a coach, I mean, more or less like a personal trainer who I'm accountable to.
Yeah.
That's really from a physical mm-hmm. fitness and health perspective. He's not separate from that. I have a handful of business mentors
yes.
who I look at what they've done in their business career and but they're not experts in the health and fitness, just like this other guy's not in the business side, right?
Yeah.
I have a couple other people that I really wanted to start figuring out how I'm going to develop. I'd eventually love to get married and have children. Yeah. So I'm like, I guess what I'm trying to say to people, part of what I've realized when we talk about mentors is that, I mean, A, just getting started is great. Someone that you can look up to, learn from, that you admire, that you respect, all of that. Part of my process, though, has been figuring out the specific areas that I want to improve on in my life
yeah.
and recognize that nobody's perfect in all areas.
No.
But let me go get a mentor for that specific niche. So I have multiple mentors sure. now. And I'm always also trying to find better mentors or other ways to improve, et cetera. So it's kind of never ending, but I love what you're, you know, advocating here.
And there's people mentors. In this town that in Austin and everywhere in this country that believe in this concept in the business community. I mean, I like what, you know, Dan Graham's doing Absolutely. With the Center for Social yeah. Innovation and having office near each other so they can talk to each other. Nonprofits, social innovators, business people, we need to do this.
And I on that point too, because we did talk about him yesterday, and I am not paid at all by Dan to make this statement. But let me put it out there because what you said is so true. So gosh, 6-7 years ago when I originally had the idea for Charity Charge. And Dan was still running Build a Sign and obviously extremely busy with that.
Yeah.
Okay. This is before Notley. This is before, he's always been philanthropic, but before what it is now today, I can't tell you how many times one-on-one that guy met with me. Can't tell you how much advice he gave me.
Yeah.
You know what he's gotten out of it? Monetarily? Nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just did it because he was being a nice guy and a mentor even back then. So I don't want to make it, but I want to acknowledge the town and the philosophy of Austin. I might as well, since you brought it up, single it out to mention that, you know, these are people that have done it for a long time. And for anyone, just like what you're doing with these volunteers, you always have something to give. You can be a mentor at any stage. It's not like, once you, in this case, you know, sell your company and are right. super successful financially, then you can give back and be a mentor. I'm just telling you, like, these people, and Dan's one of them, have been doing it their whole life.
It's a thought. Yeah. So people listening or when we talk to them about mentoring, like their first thing, I don't have time. You got to eat lunch. You got time. and if Dan had time for you or has time for me, you know, and, you know, these executive directors, I'm in an organization called One Voice and we meet with each other. You know, we have a buddy program. We make time for each other. So you have time to give to someone. And whether you're saying, my thing isn't really kids. Okay. Pour into an adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Pour into somebody else. And it will give you all kinds of rewards that you shouldn't go in. You're not going into giving for, but it happens.
100%. 100%. I think that I just will share something else that's top of my mind because I love getting into the practical too. I get a bunch of people that reach out to me that I've never heard of that, you know, send me an email and want, you know, have questions about starting a social enterprise or something or other. And just for what it worth, kind of my tip, I usually respond to all of them. But before I get on the phone or before I commit to meet with the person, I say, could you please write me back your specific questions? Because I want to qualify that like they're going down the path. I want to make sure I can help them instead of just having this, you know, totally, incoherent type of conversation. I just try to steer it. So I just suggest to anyone that might reach out to a mentor or ask someone for their time, try to be specific and a little bit thoughtful about what you want from that person.
Yeah. What are you looking for? Why do you want to meet with that person? Even if it's not a mentor and it's a one-time meeting, you want to let them know what it's about. And you want that person across the table to feel good about what they're doing for you.
100%. So I love this. We're coming up to the top of 30 minutes. And the way I like to do these is we just cut it 30 minutes. Hope to have you on as a future guest for all of the great things we'll be able to do together. But I want to say, Dan Leal from Seedling, thank you for being with us. Tell us, I'm going to tell everyone actually for you right now that more information, you can go to seedlingmentors.org. Again, that's seedlingmentors.org, S-E-E-D-L-I-N-G, mentors.org. Thank you.